This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day as we do the best we can to honor the fallen, respect their sacrifice on these days, tell at least a few of their tales.
The sacrifice that they made was not merely for a single battle, a long ago victory, or a fleeting triumph decades or centuries past. Their sacrifice was for today, tomorrow, and every morning thereafter. Every child that lives in peace, every home that is filled with joy and love, every day the Republic stands is only possible because of those who did what had to be done when duty called, and the cost was everything.
The cost was everything. This is about what they gave up and what their families left behind, what they gave up. It's a lot to give up a loved one for your country. A lot. And I know there are people listening right now who are hurting today, and we are with you as best we can. You gave up so much, so much. Let's do some more from Vietnam, because Vietnam is obviously tremendously controversial. And that makes it difficult for a lot of people, a lot of veterans, a lot of families. It makes it difficult. In a way, I will say that World War II, for instance, World War II, not that it was easy. I don't want to act like anything was easy. It was all terrible. But in World War II, there wasn't that thing looming over it that was, did we have to do this? Was it necessary? It wasn't looming over it. But with Vietnam, it was. And I just want to stress to you, that doesn't matter. That doesn't change the sacrifice. That doesn't change the courage. That doesn't change what they gave up. If there's some dirtball politician or even general or something like that out there that made bad decisions and did wrong things and maybe dragged us into something we shouldn't do, that's his problem. Today's not about that. Today's about honoring, no matter what the conflict was. Today's about honoring those who gave up everything. Guys like John L. Haynes of Vandalia, Michigan. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. The President of the United States takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to John Loda Haynes, Specialist Fourth Class, U.S. Army, for extraordinary heroism in connection with military operations involving conflict with an armed hostile force in the Republic of Vietnam while serving with headquarters and headquarters company, 1st Battalion, 5th Infantry, 2nd Brigade, 25th Infantry Division. Specialist IV Haynes distinguished himself by exceptionally valorous actions on the 6th of March, 1968, as medical aid man for an infantry platoon conducting a sweep and secure mission near Hoc Mon. As his unit moved into a dense wood line, it was subjected to intense small arms fire, automatic weapons, and anti-tank rocket fire from an enemy force of unknown size. Five members of his platoon were seriously wounded by the initial burst of savage hostile fire. Fearlessly exposing himself to the withering fire, Specialist Haynes raced forward to assist his stricken comrades. With bullets striking all around him, he courageously moved from one casualty to another, administering first aid. Specialist Haynes was hit while treating one of the soldiers, but disregarded his wound and continued his life-saving mission. Observing his platoon sergeant severely wounded and lying in an open area raked by enemy machine gun fire, he rushed to the man and began attending him. Specialist Haynes was instantly killed by the machine gun fire while applying the last bandage to his fallen comrade. His gallant and determined actions in close combat saved the lives of several fellow soldiers. Specialist for Haynes' extraordinary heroism and devotion to duty at the cost of his life were in keeping with the highest traditions of military service and reflect great credit upon himself, his unit, and the United States Army. Happened like that a lot in Vietnam. The jungle's so thick, you get close to it, they're waiting for you, and they just open up on you. Another one, Charles R. Lauer, Downey, California. President of the United States takes pride in presenting the Navy Cross posthumously to Charles Russell Lauer, Corporal, U.S. Marine Corps, for extraordinary heroism as a crew chief with Company A, 3rd Amphibian Tractor Battalion, 1st Marine Division Reinforced, Fleet Marine Force in the Republic of Vietnam on the 18th of June, 1967. Following an assault by 3 amphibian tractors, Hill 11 continued to receive heavy, accurate, automatic fire from tree lines to the right and left and tunnels and bunkers on the hill itself. As a platoon of infantry endeavored to reach the hill, vicious enemy fire cut down the platoon commander, his radio operator, and another Marine. Corporal Lauer was at this time manning a machine gun mounted atop his amphibian tractor. With complete disregard for his own safety, he nonetheless ordered his tractor forward and dropped its ramp to pull in the wounded. At this time, the enemy concentrated its already intense fire on the medical evacuation progress by his vehicle. Unhesitatingly, and knowing the intimate danger involved, he elected to stay by the gun to deliver accurate counterfire into the surrounding tree lines. When the incoming fire became so intense that it began ripping into the interior of the tractor and endangering the wounded, he ordered his tractor to be turned stern to fire so that the engine could shield the casualties. At this time, Corporal Lauer elected to remain atop the tractor to cover for another group of wounded, fully mindful of the intense danger. With enemy fire ripping across his tractor from two sides, he began to shift his position and was mortally wounded. By his daring initiative, valiant fighting spirit, and selfless devotion to duty in the face of imminent danger, Corporal Lauer was responsible for saving many of his comrades and thereby upheld the highest traditions of Marine Corps and U.S. Naval service. And he gallantly gave his life for his country. Another one. Last one for Vietnam. This is a Roy Knight Jr. from Millsap, Texas. The President of the United States takes pride in presenting the Air Force Cross posthumously to Roy Abner Knight Jr., Major, U.S. Air Force, for extraordinary heroism in military operations against an opposed armed force as pilot of an A-1E aircraft of the 602 Tactical Fighter Squadron, Erdon Royal Thai Air Base, Thailand, 7th Air Force, in action over Laos on the 19th of May, 1967. On that date, Major Knight led his flight in a strike against one of the most important and heavily defended target complexes in Southeast Asia. Against overwhelming odds, Major Knight pressed his attack on the target in spite of being cautioned by other pilots that a devastating barrage of anti-aircraft fire was directed at his aircraft. Major Knight acknowledged awareness of the situation, but continued his attack. His aircraft was struck, resulting in the loss of control. Major Knight, fully realizing that he could not regain control, jettisoned his ordnance on target in a valiant attempt to destroy it, and his aircraft subsequently impacted the target area. Major Knight's unparalleled bravery and courage against virtually insurmountable obstacles were in the highest tradition of military service. Through his extraordinary heroism, superb airmanship, and aggressiveness, Major Knight reflected the highest credit upon himself and the United States Air Force. A couple more words on those two that I just got done reading. One, door gunners in Vietnam and gunners on the amphibious vehicles don't get near the love and respect they deserve, because those are almost always the heaviest machine gun on the battlefield. When a helo comes in and there's a machine door gunner on the side, it's a minigun, it's an M60. It's something that's pouring a lot of lead into the enemy. And so when that helicopter's coming in, if you're on the ground and you're one of the Vietnam soldiers, Vietnamese soldiers, who do you think you need to take out first? Those guys died all the time because so many people were shooting at them. Same thing when it comes to the amphibious vehicles. You're on top barking at the enemy with a heavy machine gun. You are just naturally, it's just natural. It happens in combat. The weapons are going to slowly but surely start focusing on you. And the pilots in Vietnam, the North Vietnamese had very, very capable air defenses, especially in the sensitive parts of Laos and Cambodia, like we talked about earlier. They had real big boy anti-air guns that could take out our planes, our helos, and they did oftentimes. Think about the bravery it takes to fly through a wall of lead to get your stuff on target. Unbelievable amounts of bravery. All right, a couple more words, maybe some GWAT talk. Global War on Terror, next.
Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day as we do the best we can to honor the fallen on what is a very, very heavy day, but at the same time, also a celebration that we have a country with brave men and women willing to make these kind of sacrifices. I'm gonna read this Iraq list to try to wrap up the list. And remember, at the end of the show, if you're waiting for it, I am going to play Taps one time this show. There's just too many names, too many stories. I'm going to play Taps to cap off the very end of the show to respect everybody who gave their lives for this country. But these are the final names. These are all from Iraq, okay? Captain Sean Lyerly, Sergeant Kirk Strasseski, Master Sergeant Sean Thomas, Major Alan Johnson, Tech Sergeant Anthony Capra, Staff Sergeant Mark Lawton, Lance Corporal William Lusink, Corporal Jessica Ellis, Staff Sergeant Kobe Schwab, Corporal Kelly Groth, Lance Corporal Scott Modine, Corporal Brian Prenning, Staff Sergeant Nino Levudice, Staff Sergeant Andrew Baddock, Sergeant Zachary Wobbler, Sergeant First Class David Hurst, Command Sergeant Major Donovan Watts, Staff Sergeant Dave Weger, Sergeant First Class Christopher Brevard, Captain Edward Iwan, Sergeant Jesse Davila. Now, on the Global War on Terror, because I have Navy Cross, Distinguished Service Cross, Air Force Cross, some things we're going to read here. The Global War on Terror, I know it's more recent, so it needs less of a recap. And I understand some of this, a lot of this may be hard to talk about, hard to recap. And we're not going to go into all the whys and everything, but let's just recap what happened. 9/11. You know what 9/11 was, obviously. We woke up one day and we had been attacked. I've told you the story before. I was not one of the brave souls who joined the Marines after 9/11. I was already in. I was pretty freshly in. I think I'd been in for a year. And we had just got back from morning PT, and they told us to go up to our rooms. One of the towers had been hit, and we watched live as the second one was hit. We watched them both fall. It's an awful, awful, awful affair. And we lost all those Americans. And from there, we tried to figure out how do we fight back? How do we fight back? Now, I'll leave it for another day to analyze the why and the screw-ups and the everything else. But I will say this. As a country, no matter your size, whether it's America or anyone else, part of being a citizen is for protection. That's a huge part of being a citizen. Why become a citizen of a country? Why stay a citizen of a country? For the protection that country provides. And part of the way of protecting, part of the way you protect your people is, it's the promise that if you attack us, we'll kill you. And I know that's harsh, but it's a harsh world. We woke up, thousands of Americans had died. We discovered it was this group that many Americans were aware of vaguely. Everyone got a lot more aware of it afterwards. Al-Qaeda. There was this Islamic jihadist group that had a lot of axes to grind with America. They'd already attacked us several times before, and this time they pulled it off in a large way. Now, we responded. First, it was Afghanistan, because that was the area that was hiding Osama bin Laden. And the goal was to kill Osama bin Laden. At least at first, that was the goal. And at first, it was not a super large footprint thing. It was, you know, the Green Beret, CIA, Spec Ops types in the mountains of Afghanistan trying to chase this guy down, find him, and kill him, which in and of itself is a very, very difficult affair. Then we just got bogged down. And it goes that way so often when you, this is not a uniquely American thing, when you gather your army and you cross borders with it, cross oceans with it, and you get into a place, it's easy to get bogged down there. Don't think this is uniquely American. It happened to the Romans all the friggin' time. They'd cross borders to fight someone and end up having to chase this tribe and that tribe. And then it devolves into guerrilla warfare. And then the mission gets unclear. And then, just like Afghanistan, then the politics back home changes as people vote in different ways for different reasons. But Afghanistan really turned into this nasty, nasty little affair. And I did not fight there. Iraq is where I was, but I have a lot of friends who did. It just sounds like a brutal environment to fight because it's mountains, it's valleys, it's cold, it's a horrible place. Iraq was different. Iraq, we invaded, beat the living crap out of the Iraqi army, and then because of where it is, conveniently located for all the scummy jihadists over there, they started pouring their foot soldiers over the border with training and equipment to make sure our guys would die and be maimed. And it turned into this terrible IED, just awful conflict in a million different ways. And a lot of people died. And a lot of people lost parts of themselves, physical parts, mental parts. And we're going to read a few of these citations. One actually got a wonderful write-up in the LA Times I'll read a little bit of as we try to celebrate and honor the GWAT guys who gave their lives for this country. Hang on.
The Jesse Kelly Show. On air and online at jessekellyshow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day, a Monday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, we've been all over the place, Korea, Vietnam, reading names and citations. If you miss any part of the show and you want to listen to the whole thing, iHeart, Spotify, iTunes, you can go download a podcast of it. And yes, we will be back to our regularly scheduled program tomorrow on Tuesday, where we'll be talking more politics and laughing and goofing off. And look, if this is your first time listening, we usually goof off a lot more than we are. Today is only for the fallen and the families they left behind. And we're going to do a couple GWAT citations, Global War on Terror citations. People don't know, and I was not in Fallujah, by the way, but I have friends who were, and the fighting in Fallujah was terrible. Absolutely terrible fighting. Whenever you're in a situation where you're in an urban environment fighting, it's almost universally bad. Very, very difficult to fight in an urban environment because there are so many places for the enemy to hide, to shoot at you from. It's just, it's always been difficult since before the invention of landmines and firearms and grenades and things like that. Again, in ancient times with swords and spears, they would talk about how hard it is to fight in an urban environment. Even when you've conquered and you're sacking a city, they're throwing pieces of the roof down on you and they're killing you and your men on the way in. It's just really, really terrible. And the LA Times did a great write-up on this guy. I'll read just a little bit of it after I read his Navy Cross. United States Marine. His name is Christopher S. Adelsperger. He's from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And this is his Navy Cross citation. For extraordinary heroism while serving as a rifleman, Company K, 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, Regimental Combat Team 1, 1st Marine Division, in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom on the 10th of November, 2004. As Private First Class Adelsberger made entry into a house in the Jolan district of A1 of Al-Fallujah during Operation Al-Fajir, his squad received a heavy volume of enemy machine gun fire from a well-prepared entrenched machine gun position. These fires instantly killed the point man and injured another Marine and the platoon corpsman. Exposed to heavy machine gun fire and grenades, Private First Class Adelsberger immediately attacked the enemy with rifle fire. While doing so, he suffered a fragmentation wound from enemy grenades. With the majority of his platoon pinned down by insurgent positions, Private First Class Adelsberger single-handedly cleared stairs and a rooftop to move the injured to a rooftop where they could receive medical attention. On his own initiative, while deliberately exposing himself to heavy enemy fire, he established a series of fighting positions and attacked the enemy, forcing them to be destroyed in place or to move into an area where adjacent forces could engage them. Disregarding his own wounds and physical exhaustion, Private First Class Adelsberger rejoined his platoon and demanded to take the point for a final assault on the same machine gun position. Once an assault amphibian vehicle created a breach in the wall adjacent to the enemy's position, Private First Class Adelsberger was the first Marine to re-enter the courtyard, where he eliminated a remaining insurgent at close range. When the fighting finally ceased, a significant number of insurgents from fortified positions had been eradicated. Through his actions, Private First Class Adelsberger destroyed the last strong point in the Jolan district of Al-Fallujah and saved the lives of his fellow Marines. By his outstanding display of decisive leadership, unlimited courage in the face of heavy enemy fire, and utmost devotion to duty, Private First Class Adelsberger reflected great credit upon himself and upheld the highest traditions of the Marine Corps and the United States Naval Service. And he was killed in combat 30 days later. The LA Times actually wrote this on him. On the 10th of November in 2004, in 30 minutes of close combat, Marine PFC Christopher Adelsberger, a soft-spoken, religious young man who loved poetry and art, attacked an enemy stronghold in Fallujah, Iraq, and killed at least 11 insurgents. He killed them with his M16 and with his grenade launcher. He killed them at such close range he could hear the blood gurgling in their mouths and noses. He killed insurgents who were heavily armed and probably high on drugs and who had just killed his close friend, Lance Corporal Eric Hodges. He protected two wounded squad members from attack and saved innumerable Marines. When it was over, Adelsberger's face had been bloodied by shrapnel, and he had bullet holes in his sleeve and the collar of his uniform. He refused to be evacuated until Hodges' body was recovered. "It was a tremendous bit of fighting," said Colonel Patrick Millay, the battalion commander. "He was a quiet kid, but he was remarkable." For his bravery, Adelsberger is among a handful of Marines who had been nominated for the Medal of Honor, so on and so forth. Only after his death did family members learn of his bravery. By the way, he died. He stormed into another building, in case you're wondering. 30 days later, he had gone into another building with his Marines, and he was shot in the heart. Only after his death did family members here learn of his bravery. At first, they were shocked. This was the same person who had once cringed at the thought of shooting birds on a hunting trip. Then they recognized the details of the firefight, the determined youth they knew and loved. Quote, "That was Chris. Whatever he did, he always went in with the idea that nobody was going to beat him. Nobody," said Dennis Adelsberger, 53, his uncle. That mentality is what wins wars. That I will win. That nobody will defeat me. I will win. And it's amazing when you read their stories and talk to their families or watch documentaries, if that's your thing, or whatever it is. It's amazing how consistent it is that the man who does these deeds is a competitive man. For him, he wants to win, and he feels like he's losing. And especially if you hurt one of his friends, he will die to hurt you back. And the stories, I mean, they're just, they're amazing. And global war on terror, because it's still so fresh and so raw for so many people, will not be talked about appropriately, in my opinion, for some time. I mean, I realize some people are, but it's just one of those things. People who lived through Vietnam will know this. The subject itself kind of gets uncomfortable for people because of the circumstances around it. In my own life, I'll tell you, most people don't talk to me about it. They don't talk to me about Iraq. It's not a subject that comes up. It's kind of one of those things that most people avoid, either out of respect or out of discomfort or something like that. But the men and women who died in the GWAT are every bit as heroic. They gave every bit as much of themselves as somebody who died on the beaches of Normandy. They all died just the same, right beside their friends, fighting, doing what they believed is right, and trying to win. And it's the least we can do to pay them some respect. Pay them some respect. Doug Collins said this. This is very well done.
When you think about those who gave that ultimate sacrifice, when you think about the families who are home, I remember being when I was in Iraq and I was having to work and we would lose folks in the hospital and sending them home. What I was thinking about was the families who were now without. So today on this Memorial Day, not only do we remember those who gave that last full measure of devotion, but remember today as you go about your life that there are some who are still looking at an empty chair. They're looking at a visit or someone that they would pick up the phone and talk to that they no longer can. It's about those who gave that sacrifice that we remember today, because our country is built on the shoulders of those who gave for us.
It sure is. We'll do a couple more of these, and then we'll check out of here. Next.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Memorial Day. We will be back tomorrow for a regular show. Let's get to a couple more citations before we sign off and check out of here. This one, Distinguished Service Cross, is for a Stephen A. Booker from Apollo, Pennsylvania. How about that? The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress, July 9, 1918, takes pride in presenting the Distinguished Service Cross posthumously to Staff Sergeant Stephen A. Booker, United States Army, for extraordinary heroism while engaged in action against an enemy of the United States while serving as a tank commander with Company A, 1st Battalion, 64th Armored Regiment, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 3rd Infantry Division, Mechanized, on the 5th of April 2003 in Iraq. On this date, Staff Sergeant Booker's platoon led a task force in a movement to contact along Highway 8 towards Baghdad International Airport. 2 kilometers after the line of departure, the platoon came under heavy small arms and rocket-propelled grenade fire from an enemy element. He immediately communicated the situation to his chain of command, encouraged his crew, and returned fire with his tank-mounted machine gun. When both his and his crew's machine gun malfunctioned, Staff Sergeant Booker, with total disregard for his personal safety, exposed himself by lying in a prone position on top of the tank's turret and accurately engaged enemy forces with his personal weapon. While exposed, he effectively protected his platoon's flank and delivered accurate information to his command during a critical and vulnerable point of the battle. Staff Sergeant Booker's fearless attitude and excitement over the communications network inspired his platoon to continue the attack and assured them and leadership they would defeat the enemy and reach their objective safely. As he remained exposed, Staff Sergeant Booker identified an enemy troop carrier which was attempting to bypass his tank, but within seconds engaged the enemy vehicle and destroyed it prior to the enemy troops dismounting. Along the 8-kilometer route, he remained exposed and continued to engage the enemy with accurate rifle fire until he was mortally wounded. Staff Sergeant Booker's actions are in keeping with the highest traditions in military service and reflect great credit upon himself, the 3rd Infantry Division, and the United States Army. We'll do another one. Final one. This is Air Force Cross. It's from Afghanistan. For a Jason D. Cunningham out of Camarillo, California. The President of the United States of America, authorized by Title 10, Section 8742 USC, awards the Air Force Cross to Senior Airman Jason D. Cunningham for extraordinary heroism in military operations against an opposing force while serving as a pararescueman near the village of Marzak in the Paktia province of Afghanistan on the 4th of March, 2002. By the way, this guy's one of the special operators. He's Air Force PJ, like BK is. So he's a stud. On that proud day, Airman Cunningham was the primary Air Force combat search and rescue medic assigned to a quick reaction force tasked to recover 2 American servicemen evading capture in austere terrain occupied by massed Al-Qaeda and Taliban forces. Shortly before landing, his MH-47E helicopter received accurate rocket-propelled grenade and small arms fire, severely disabling the aircraft and causing it to crash land. The assault force formed a hasty defense and immediately suffered 3 fatalities and 5 critical casualties. Despite effective enemy fire and at great risk to his own life, Airman Cunningham remained in the burning fuselage of the aircraft in order to treat the wounded. As he moved his patients to a more secure location, mortar rounds began impacting within 50 feet of his position. Disregarding this extreme danger, he continued the movement and exposed himself to an enemy fire on several separate occasions. When the second casualty collection point was also compromised, in a display of uncommon valor and gallantry, Airman Cunningham braved an intense small arms and rocket-propelled grenade attack while repositioning the critically wounded to a 3rd collection point. Even after he was mortally wounded and quickly deteriorating, he continued to direct patient movement and transferred care to another medic. In the end, his distinct efforts led to the successful delivery of 10 gravely wounded Americans to life-saving medical treatment. Through his extraordinary heroism, superb airmanship, aggressiveness in the face of the enemy, and in dedication of his service to his country, Senior Airman Cunningham reflected the highest credit upon himself and the United States Air Force. And there is, by the way, an effort out there, in case you're wondering, to get that upgraded to a Medal of Honor, and certainly sounds more than worthy of that, right? So we're going to play Taps here in just a second, and that's going to wrap up our show for tonight on this Memorial Day. I know that there's nothing in the world a dumb radio host could ever say to properly honor the sacrifice, giving up the rest of your life with your wife, your kids, your parents, your friends, giving up being a granddad, giving up baseball games, there's nothing in the world we can say to properly convey our honor and respect, but remember the fallen. Write their names on your heart. Talk to your kids about the things they did. Your children will enjoy these stories, and your children will learn from the people you and I look up to, okay? So let's honor the fallen, and God bless each and every person who is hurting today. All right.
Thank you.
That's all.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.